Now, community transmission is out of control. We're looking at a worst case scenario with explosive impacts. We've gone from containment to mitigation, and we're no longer testing close contacts. We have entered a daunting new phase of this pandemic. I'm joined on the line now by Colm Henry, HSE's Chief Clinical Officer. Colm Henry, thanks for joining us this morning. How concerned should we be that we have now had to abandon testing close contacts?
Good morning, Katie, and happy new year to you and all your listeners. You're correct, the disease is going out of control. We're seeing activities of virus in the community at quite alarming levels. Referrals from general practitioners for people who are symptomatic are now exceeding 15,000 per day. And our testing capacity is now certainly under strain, to include not just that 15,000, but other testing of close contacts that we were doing, acute hospitals, outbreaks, serial testing. All this is symptomatic on a virus that's gone out of control and is transmitted in a really uncontrolled manner out there in the community. The number of close contacts per individual has gone up quite rapidly. Now 6.3, but we're getting individual cases with 20 or 30 close contacts. So it is of huge concern, because we know that lag time plays through, inevitably, always plays through in every country where this virus is being, that as you see that disease activity in the community, it translates in a thudding, methodical way right through to hospitalisation, sickness and pressures in our healthcare system.
And of course the reality is we still haven't actually been hit by the big wave of actual Christmas Day gatherings, have we?
Well, we're seeing some of the consequences. It's difficult to be absolutely specific as to why things have escalated so sharply and have escalated in a manner in really a worst case scenario that we were envisaging only a few weeks ago. But the sharp upslope certainly to some degree contributed by the degree of mixing. As I said, that big increase in number of close contacts per identified case shows that people were mixing more, were out there more in congregated settings. And of course, into the mix, Katie, is this new strain that came from London and the southeast of England, which as we accrue more evidence, we know it's here now, and we know that it's a much more transmissible variant than even the existing knowledge we had on the variant, on the strain, the predominant strain here already, which is very transmissible, as we know.
But now, if we stop now, and as you say, the advice is now, don't look for a test if you are told you're a close contact. We're just going to lose complete a sense then of the prevalence of this in the community, are we not? We won't catch any asymptomatic cases now.
Well, the disease has gone to such a level now in the community. As I said, there are 15,000 cases per day being referred by general practitioners who have symptoms. It's astonishing numbers. So we don't need to know absolutely accurate, specific information.
Sorry, are you saying just to be clear about that, Dr. Henry, you're saying those are people who have symptoms, or people who are, up until now, until the new advice, were people with close contacts?
No, these are people referred from community with symptoms for testing. I'm not including close contacts. Close contacts are additional tests in over that. So, and these cases, and bear in mind, Katie, it's not just the numbers of cases being referred with symptoms, but the positivity. It's only a couple of months ago and we saw positivity rates on people referred at very low percentage, 1-2%. It's now 18+% in recent days. So, and in some counties, approaching 30% or more. So we're seeing a high conversion from those who are symptomatic with that cough, that fever, those familiar symptoms, to those who turn out to be positive for COVID-19.
Is there a danger, though, by telling people who have been told they're close contacts, look, just self-isolate anyway, restrict your movements until you get symptoms, and then move and ask for a test? When those people don't have, you know, that initial contact with the health service, is there less likely that they will actually take that advice and restrict their movements if they have no symptoms?
Well, I hope not, but certainly our message in our audience goes away beyond the close contacts. It's to everybody listening this morning and everybody out there in society to act as if everybody you meet could have the disease. The disease prevalence rates now out in the community are extremely high and are increasing exponentially.
We know that Dr. Hooland's letter, the most recent letter on the December 30th letter, saying that NPHET reiterates its view that the current set of measures will not be sufficient to interrupt transmission patterns to the extent necessary. So we're actually acknowledging that these very, very strict restrictions, level 5 restrictions that have been introduced, that's not going to cut it for us this time. So what else are we facing into? What further recommendations are you looking at in NPHET?
Well, I'm not going to speak on behalf of NPHET. I'm speaking primarily this morning on behalf of the HSE, but I've already clearly stated my concern. It takes a long time. We've all understood the lag time between those cases turning positive and before people getting sick and that translating into hospitalizations. The lag time also applies to the effect of measures. It's like turning an ocean liner. It takes some time before the implementation and adherence to level 5 measures and the a change in patterns to see a week or two before we'll see a positive response. What we're concerned right now is based on the patterns we're seeing right now. We're projecting with a fairly conservative estimate, Katie, that we'd be seeing certainly 1,200 or so admissions in hospital COVID by mid-January and perhaps 2,000 by the end of January. And that's with a reasonably conservative estimate. So it's quite frankly unthinkable that we won't all adhere to these measures that are now brought in, these level 5 measures, because we can't let that scenario play out.
Okay, but what I'm saying is that it's been said there in black and white that that's not going to be enough for us. So what else are we likely to be asked to do?
The level 5 measures are already quite stringent, and I think the most important message I have this morning to everybody is if everybody acts as if everybody they meet is a potential case, then the cumulative effect of all those millions of little actions, of the little things that people have been doing that now they can avoid doing, will be that we will turn this round and we will avoid that our healthcare system becoming overwhelmed, and we will avoid illness and death in older and vulnerable people just at a time that the vaccine is arriving on our shores.
Can I ask you, just in terms of that other news that broke yesterday evening about those 4,000 cases that have been, the swabs have tested positive but have not been reported as cases. Can you just explain to people really, because I think people are surprised that there is this lag between an actual positive swab and a reported case.
Yes, this pertains to systems reported to an IT disease surveillance system. So just to reassure people that these cases, all positive cases that are triggered for contact tracing and all those actions took place, all those essential public health actions have taken place. So no harm was done as a consequence to individuals or to the contact tracing as a consequence of this IT difficulty that was faced by a system that frankly was overwhelmed after Christmas based on the positive number of lab results coming through. So we were aware of this. You'll have heard Philip Nolan speak that his modelling had taken account of this, and his modelling he articulated quite well last night at the NPHET press conference that he attended, that the additional number of lab cases that played into his modelling and hasn't substantially changed his modelling. We already know enough from the number of cases out there. We already know enough from those disturbing trends in hospitals now where we're seeing an exponential rise in admissions, that activity in primary care. We already know enough to say that this virus is out of control.
Just briefly on that modelling, because we saw the numbers that we were being told to expect when we were opening up the country at the start of December. It was supposed to be 1,200 cases by the second week in January, and then that was pulled back. Has our modelling proven to be accurate? Because we just seem to have pushed well beyond what we had been told to anticipate, even in worst case scenarios.
Yes, it has been certainly on the more the projections. There was more extreme projections, unfortunately, came through. True, but I think
this even goes beyond those extreme projections.
It does, and added into the mix, perhaps, and time will tell, is the arrival on our shore of this more transmissible variant. And we're seeing the impact of that variant, not just in Ireland, but many European countries and as far away as USA and Japan. It may well be, as we perform more analysis of these, and some preliminary analysis shows from one particular study from cases two weekends ago, we saw out of 73 analysed cases, the gene sequencing showed that variant in 10% of cases. And it may well be that there's an additional
So 10% is what we're working on a basis of at the moment.
I think the number analysed was too small to project onto the large number of cases we have now, but it's safe to say that it's here, and it's probably contributing to the degree of transmissibility of the virus. But let's be honest, we already knew this virus was already very, very transmissible. We already knew it was extremely contagious, and we already knew it had the potential to do great harm.
What about the South African variant we're hearing about as well?
South African variant, again, shares similar traits, that it's highly transmissible. It's while it's of concern to us, the variant that's closer to home, much greater concern given the degree of movement of peoples between these two islands and given the inevitability that it was going to arrive here, and it is here.
There's also in the data on that new variant in the UK indicating that there is a small but statistically significant increase in the number of young people who appear to be getting sick from this virus, from this new variant. Will that play into decisions we're going to make around the opening of schools?
Yes, there's a suggestion that there are more positive cases in children, and our experience to date with children is that transmission appears to be very low between children, and disease activity and severity of disease seems to be very low with children. There's no suggestion to date that this new variant is more virulent in the sense that it causes more severe disease in children, just a suggestion that it causes more cases. Will it play into the school reopening? Certainly, like many other people, I want to see the schools open. I think we've seen great harm done to children, particularly early education children and special needs children, as a result of that protracted closure through from March through to May. We don't want to go into that scenario again. Every battle has to have some cause worth fighting for, and surely education and healthcare should be the two things that are worth fighting for in this third surge.
Okay. Many, many thanks for that. We'll leave it there. That's Dr. Colm Henry, HSC's Chief Clinical Officer. I'm going to move now because I'm joined in studio by leader of the Green Party, Transport Minister Eamon Ryan. Eamon Ryan, it's a historic day today. Obviously, as of 11 o'clock last night, the UK's Brexit transition period formally ended. The UK is now fully and completely out of the EU. We will discuss that and its impact for us here in a moment. But first, you were with us there listening to the HSE's Colm Henry. A very troubling, very, very scary picture that he's painting for us there. I have to put it to you that, where we find ourselves, and there's a lot of fear out there, there's a lot of anger out there at the moment as well, and people asking, why did we deviate from Neffert's advice at the beginning of December and open hospitality when we were warned that the numbers were too high to do that? Because every time, it seems, that we deviate from Neffert's advice, we find ourselves in trouble.
I don't believe we did deviate from Neffert's advice.
Neffert advised categorically, do not open hospital. We do not advise the opening of hospitality this time.
There were a whole range of different things were advised. Some we went further
than
Neffert.
That was one of them, though.
Yeah, it was. But some we went further than Neffert. They were advising that we would allow a wider range of household visits, which is one of the other areas where there's the greatest transmission. But we decided to be stricter on that. But the broad approach, as I heard Ms. Simon Coveney was saying in Morning Ireland earlier on, is for the government working with our health authorities, with the HSC.
Would you accept that we went further in terms of opening up the country than Neffert wanted us to do at the time, given the numbers that we were at? You don't accept that?
We were working with, and still are, with Neffert. And what was most important is when we saw what this sudden spike in transmissions, very rapid, very recent, the government immediately responded twice in terms of, because even the change a week ago from in the last few days is a very different situation. So we responded very quickly, accepting Neffert's advice, putting in the most stringent level 5 arrangements right across the country. I think Colm Henry's right. I agreed with everything he said there in terms of the real key to this is getting back control. It will not be easy, but I believe we collectively as a country, as people, will be able to do it. We have to do it for the prize, as he said, of avoiding our hospital systems being overrun and being able to keep our schools open. I think the Irish people buy into that, and we can and will be good at getting the transmission under control.
But people out there will be listening to this. They were told, go off and have a meaningful Christmas. They were told, you can have that. Enjoy a meaningful Christmas. And now they will wonder, looking back, and obviously done with the best of intentions, and everybody wanted to you know, give people some bit of a break in this. But in retrospect, where we are today,
Katie, even before Christmas, I don't know your experience, but even before Christmas, the message went out, actually, this is not going to be like any normal Christmas and have a meaningful Christmas. Even before Christmas, we actually recognised that the numbers were starting to rise and we had to act. So I think the majority of Irish people actually had a very quiet Christmas and had a remarkably quiet New Year's Eve. And what I hope is that...
So what happened?
This virus is very transmissible. We'll have to wait in terms of the science telling us why the particular spike, which has happened in every single other European country. Talking to Dr. Tony Hoolan yesterday, just to give some comfort or some kind of sense of, you know, not to be terrified by this, because it is very frightening. We are at least, compared to all those other European countries, starting from the lowest base. We were the best performing in terms of... So while the numbers rising at the moment are very frightening and we have to reel an eye out for particularly our hospital system, if we do what Colm says there, if we collectively, let's say for just for the next week, next 10 days, stay home, reduce contacts, Keep it very simple, very, very clear that everyone's at risk, therefore I just reduce all contacts down. From that number that Colin mentioned there, you know, an average 6 contacts, get that down to 1 or 2. That actually is going to be the key. And I think if we collectively, which I believe we will do as a country, because we've done it before, and I believe we will be able to do it again this time, do that even over the next week, what I hope and we will see is by the middle of January that those fearful numbers around what might the implication for a hospital system start to turn the other way. And I believe the vast majority of Irish people have already bought into that, already expressing that. I think most people actually had a very quiet Christmas, had a very quiet New Year's Eve last night, and we have to work now collectively for next week to really focus and double down on that.
But
to avoid
where are these 30 people, individuals with 30 contacts that Colm Henry was talking to us about? Then the fact that everyone's contacts seems, or the average contacts have gone up to above 6. That's not a picture of people having very quiet.
No, but that's not, and what the message I suppose is, the collective one, is that's just not socially acceptable now. Particularly for the next period, we're not going to have that sort of hyper-social, which is the source of transmission. And I think actually most Irish people are absolutely, absolutely fully aware of that at this present moment in time. The numbers have scared us correctly, and I believe the actions in response to that will help us avoid the worst possible prognosis.
I put that line from the NPHET letter from Tony Hoolan to the Health Minister dated December 30th to Colm Henry there, that this level 5, these restrictions at this level will not do the job for us, that we will have to go further. That's the advice or the recommendation of Dr. Tony Hoolan at this point. Have you discussed that at cabinet level in terms of further restrictions? We had travel restrictions of 2 kilometres back at the height of the first restrictions. Could we be looking at that again, or at curfews? What other tools have we left?
Come back to Katie. When it comes down to that, if we're finding ourselves in that situation where our hospital system is overrun, of course you will then look at every other measure. But what we have in place...
I'm just wondering what's left, where else can we go with this?
Yeah, I don't believe we... I'm not going to set out all those different possibilities. Anyone can imagine what sort of measures. But what we've seen in the past is the sort of restrictions we're putting in place now, which is right across the country, every single community, it has worked in the past. Is the kind of probably strictest level compared to other European countries. But ultimately, what really matters is how do we actually behave? How do we all of us collectively, what Colm said there is true, it's that millions of small encounters or otherwise is what determines this. And I think what the Irish people have shown is the ability to knuckle, to hunker down, to say, okay, for the sake of our hospital system, for the sake of our children, for the sake of our older people, we're going to keep it really tight for the next period. And I think that is what works.
Okay. And can I just ask you before we leave this, obviously schools and what's going to happen there is a huge issue for so many people. I was listening to the Education Minister, Norma Foley, yesterday talking about it being her firm intention to open the schools again in January 11th. There's a bit of wiggle room there in terms of what might happen. Is this being kept under very open review?
Just explain, the government has to take into account a whole variety of different factors. And what Colm said there is true. You have to look at public health in the widest sphere. And I think there's a real correct view that in the loss of schools, the loss of education, formal education in setting, actually has significant detrimental effect, particularly on children from less well-off backgrounds. And that in that public health interest, we will do everything to make sure that those schools open. And I think that is the prize, that and maintaining the integrity of our health system. That's the prize the Irish people are voting.
In the UK, they've done a kind of a more nuanced, they've various categories of students are being kept at home for remote learning. Could we be looking at something of that nature here?
I prefer to see all our schools open. And one of the things that gives me encouragement...
Well, I think most people would prefer it, Minister, with respect what I'm saying.
Yeah, but
in terms of what we're facing into and the numbers you're looking at and how it might contribute to community spread.
The interesting thing in the success we had in the autumn period and before that, when we opened up our schools, is that actually, historically, you would have said that the secondary schools were higher risk. Actually, the secondary schools were better performing. So I think actually we've shown in our school system, the teachers, the management and the pupils, that we can, by basic, simple preventative measures, wearing masks, keeping social distance, ventilating rooms, that we can actually maintain schools in a safe way.
Okay, we will leave that there because I do want to move on to Brexit. It's obviously a very big day, a day we've been waiting for some years now. We're going to be speaking to the hauliers in a moment, but I can tell you they are not happy. They say they're worried about Dublin Port being congested. They say the IT systems are barely up and running. The customs guidelines are no longer fit for purpose. And they're wondering, why are we in this position when, as I say, we had 4.5 years to prepare for this?
Because in 50 years, no one's known what it will be like to have the UK outside the European Union. And no amount of preparation on that is going to be... There will be lessons learned or there'll be differences that will evolve or will appear because this is something that hasn't happened before. But huge preparations has gone in, particularly in Dublin Port and Rosslare Port, where are the two potential crunch points. And just to explain that, the concern is that as boats come in, as ferries come in from the UK, you might have 50, 100 trucks coming out of at the one time. Because now the UK is not in the customs union or the single market, there may be a need for additional checks where you have to check a lorry to see what the cargo is, psychosanitary checks and so on. It's the delay in that checking process. We fear that it might lead to traffic delays around the port, particularly coming out into the port tunnel and so on. Now, we're fully prepared for that. There's a major centre operations room has been set up down the port to manage it. And backup arrangements if there is congestion or if there is difficulty so that we hold trucks back and we manage the traffic.
What about the arrival times of the ferries? Because I know hauliers were wondering why we can't just get them to stagger their arrival times better.
What the ferry companies say back in response to that is that they're meeting the demand of the actual exporters, that it's actually exporters are looking for these particular times. They want to take, for example, a lot of the ferries come in very early in the morning. A lot of the just-in-time delivery systems we have now from the UK is actually coming in early in the morning to be able to put things on our shelves that morning so that you're in before the traffic, so you're in time. It's that demand. And that's why I'm saying we may see changes here coming from Brexit that may take a period of time to work through. There may be a system where we have a slightly different distribution system where we're not as reliant on UK distribution systems. We're going to have to measure this.
So what would fill the gap there then?
It may well be an Irish distribution system or else an alternative direct route via the continent.
Cargo is coming in or trucks are coming in overnight and in time, as you say, to get food, fresh food on the shelves in our supermarkets, first thing when we go for our shop in the morning. And if there's now these extra checks and this congestion and these delays, so are we going to see empty supermarket shelves?
I don't believe we will. There may be disruption, particularly in traffic or for some goods. And it probably won't be for a few weeks' time because the first week or so in January is typically a quiet period.
And there was a lot of stockpiling, I think.
And a lot of stockpiling.
Ahead of this, yeah.
But I'm confident that the system will be able to adjust and we will maintain all our supply lines. But in the long run, we'll have to wait and see what the implications of Brexit are. And one of them could be different distribution systems where we're less reliant on UK delivered goods.
It all sounds a bit like we'll have to wait and see, and we hope that something will arrive to sort this out. Well, it just seems to be a bit in the lap of the gods here.
No, we have teams of people down in Dublin Port. We've spent there's been two, three years planning put into managing it, but the long term economic implications of Brexit, good and potentially bad for this country, are going to take time. And it's not just in the distribution of the haulage sector. There's each different sectors in financial services, in digital services, in energy, in fisheries, in a whole range of industries. How Brexit plays out will depend a lot on how this new partnership council works, how the regulatory system works, but also how the market responds, because it may well provide for Ireland in opportunities where actually people say, well, I want to have a business which is within the European Union, and we may see businesses here benefiting from it. In other instances, it may bring difficulties. We're going to have to monitor all.
Okay, I'm going to have to leave that there. Minister Eamon Ryan, many, many thanks for joining us on this New Year's Day, and Happy New Year to you.